Good afternoon. You're listening to another episode of KMXT 100.1 FM's Talk of the Rock. Joining me today is Ben Milstein. How are you today?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm great. You know, today's a good day. It's honestly, I have to say, having all that really nice bright weather was grand, but as somebody who doesn't have air conditioning, I'm kind of appreciating it cooling down a little. It's this is the first time I've ever lived without air conditioning, and it's I kind of miss it.
Well, that was a pretty hot stretch there. Mm. We don't see that all that often. I mean, not only this year, which obviously is true, but even in other years, that was hot.
Well, this is a perfect segue into our topic for today, which is climate change. So I guess I'll jump right off. People know you. They know who you are. They know what you're about as far as climate change goes and your own personal environmental activism and dedication on KEA. What do you see as one's individual responsibility where combating climate change is concerned?
I think that's a tough question, and I've always taken it pretty seriously, to the point of, you know, pulling tires out of bonfires and stuff like that, or just even trying not to throw a plastic fork in a fire. But I remember during the Deepwater Horizon oil spill, having this epiphany where I realized that the impact of my life was going to be really nothing compared to that, where every second of that disaster was probably more impact on the ecosystem than everything, you know, all the miles I drive and the flights I take. And I take personal responsibility seriously, but I'm also kind of feel like, well, I'm not going to sacrifice myself on this altar. I'll do my part, but if we're going to hell in a bucket, you know, I'm not going to, you know, be the one to sacrifice myself. I mean, but I do, I bought the smallest truck I could buy for the job that I have to do. You know, I take those things seriously. I'm trying to make it last till I can get an electric truck, which, you know, that seems to be close, but probably not in the next year or two.
It looks like next year, though, because Ford's going to have that electric F-150.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll be able to afford the first generation of electric trucks, you know, but maybe. I mean, there's some cheaper ones that are on the horizon too, but I don't know if, you know, if that's going to be
right.
2 years or 10 years. I mean, it's hard to say, but it's coming, you know, and we have that technology now. And, you know, we all bear responsibility. And so it's a question of where you personally draw that line. I try and purchase things without tons of packaging, if that's an option. And I mean, looking at how I run the brewery, I mean, I love that I can take beer home in a growler and bring it back to the brewery the next day and refill it, or a beer box, or, you know, something that's reusable rather than throwing package away every time I have a pint.
Right.
And so those are, and the shipping, the water is the biggest part of beer, right? It's 90-95% of the beer that you're drinking, and if you ship water across the ocean just to have that beer, that's a big difference between us just getting the water from gravity and just shipping the malt.
Right.
So malt and hops.
What are some of the other things that you do in your business to be as climate conscious as possible?
I've set up a lot of hardware to take advantage of efficiencies. I put some vents in our coolers so that we can open those vents on cold days of the year and just get free cold. Just makes the compressors run less. I've put a tempering tank in our boiler room so the water going into the boiler has a chance to warm up with waste heat, so the boiler doesn't have to work as hard. Put a refrigeration compressor in the building to give us waste heat that, so that offsets the amount we have to heat the building. You know, there's so, you know, when you look around, you can find some low-hanging fruit like that. Now we keep our spent grain in the brewery overnight so that because it's you know, in the it's around 150 degrees when we're done with it, and it's, you know, 150 gallons worth of spent grain. I don't know how many pounds it is. It's wet, so it's heavy. And so that can... So just the heat coming off of that spent grain can adds to the heat in the building, offsets the oil we burn for building heat. So there's a lot of things you can, there's low hanging fruit,
right?
If everywhere you look.
Would you ever think about doing electric heating in the brewery? Or
yeah, I would love to. It's I mean, I've got I've installed heat pumps in my homes. We got, you know, we moved about 2 years ago, so we just put in a heat pump in that house. We had a heat pump in the house we left for like 10 years or so, and so we were able to get off oil at home. But you know, that's an expensive proposition, and
right.
For a 9,000 square foot building, it's not something I've been able to consider yet. But I certainly would. I looked into an electric steam generator, but that's just not something I can pull off at this point.
Right. So, we talked a little bit about this earlier, and you described yourself using the phrase optimistic nihilist. Can you explain that for me?
The way I think about it is humans are screwed, but the world is beautiful, the beer is great, and I've been wrong before. And so it doesn't look good for us. You know, this might just not work out. But meanwhile, there's a lot to appreciate about life, and I'm going to do my best to appreciate that. I mean, that's part of why most of us probably live in Kodiak. And then meantime, do what I can to work toward, you know, a better outcome, with the hope that, you know, if you look around, there's a lot to really, be impressed by. Technological changes. You know, we understand more and more about the world. We have more and more technology to address problems. So there's a lot of good things happening. It's just kind of a question of whether it happens fast enough and how much damage we do in the meantime. Yeah, it's a tough call, but,
right.
You know, so understanding that this may not go well, you kind of plug away. I mean, we're incredibly fortunate. Many of us who live here in Kodiak, very high quality of life, quality of environment, certainly. And so there's a lot to appreciate. And a lot of people have had more existential struggles than this. Many people do still ignore the environmental consequences of current human behavior. So, you know, that's an option. You just ignore it. Still, many struggles that people have are not things they can ignore, right?
Right.
And so we've still got that luxury, but, you know, it's good. So I don't want to feel too sorry for myself, you know. But when you think about when you think about the long-term damage that we're doing to the ecosystems we inhabit in general, it is kind of sad to realize we're kind of presiding over the greatest extinctions that have ever happened,
right?
You know, since humans arrived on the scene,
and since before humans arrived too,
yeah,
as far as we
right.
know.
That's right.
Do you think that in the coming years, more people will have the same sort of epiphany that you did insofar as the Deepwater Horizon crisis went?
Well, inevitably more people will have environmental epiphanies as the situations get more and more dire. You know, I mean, right, I'm sure that's happening right now for many people.
I mean, people
around the world,
the floods,
Germany,
and the
fires,
and of course the heat wave. That, I mean, it's not typical that, you know, you'd have dozens of people dying of heat stroke on the Pacific Northwest.
I don't think I've ever been somewhere that was over, you know, a few degrees above 100. And now they're looking at 120 in some places. Oh my God, that's pretty crazy.
And my mom was telling me, she was just visiting in town. She said that it got up to 114 in Seattle, which is outrageous. I mean, that's really, really, really hot for Seattle.
Yeah. But the epiphany I had during the Deepwater Horizon was that as much as I tried to do it, it wasn't enough, that the real issues were much larger scale issues. And so I'm not sure that, I think the epiphany that we want to see more of is that that both of them are important. And you know, what we do, the decisions we make about how we spend our time and our money, and but also the expectations we have for our policymakers, for our politicians, for our policies, as a culture, as a nation, those are the epiphanies that we really want to see in people, realizing that, you know, maybe public transportation is something we should support, and maybe that could reduce emissions and make the environment healthier and make the future brighter, and have more openness to the lifestyle changes that we're going to have to. I mean, it's great to have electric vehicles, but that in itself is not really going to, that's not going to be enough to, we're going to have to change policies. We're going to have to change, we're going to have public transportation options, or
right.
So there's going to be systemic changes that we need people to be open to say, instead of like, you know, you can take my V8 from my cold, dead hands, you know. I mean, V8, yeah, not beverage.
Right. In my own reporting, I used to be on the sustainability beat for Arizona PBS, and in my own reporting, I remember doing a story where some mid-size towns, or not towns, I mean cities, really, in Arizona, some like having tens of thousands of people in them, were making the decision where the city government basically said, we won't support a recycling program anymore. For us, it's simply a liability. You know, this is money that we could be injecting into schools, or whatever the case may be. They just simply felt that it would make more sense for them to be putting that money elsewhere. How do you view what do you see as the solution to problems like that for cities that need to, you know, balance their short-term needs as far as budget goes, but also will inevitably create long-term problems for the whole of the world if they're you know, ignoring climate change as a threat that must be addressed on every level of our society?
Well, I take recycling pretty seriously personally, and I'm on the board of directors of Threshold, it's interesting. I mean, recycling is makes a lot of sense. Buckminster Fuller said once that there is no waste, there is only unused resources. And I think that's true. I think eventually, if humans do what we're capable of and we make some good decisions, landfills will be obsolete. In fact, they'll get mined for resources eventually.
Right.
You know, I mean, that just makes sense. There's a resource-rich environment there. And so the recycling does make sense. A lot of times what happens in a in a city or another entity like that is that you make decisions based on a limited amount of information and a limited resources. And I can't necessarily always, I mean, without knowing more specifics of any given situation, I can't always blame people or entities for those kinds of things. Like, we just can't afford this, it's not necessary, and we have other priorities. That's not always a bad decision necessarily, but a lot of times they're based on really limited thinking. For instance, sometimes what they look at is the cost per ton of disposal, and that's like the cost this month for recycling versus the cost this month of just throwing that in the landfill. But when you look at the long-term maintenance of the landfill or the cost of landfill expansion and the timeline for things like that, it may be a lot more complicated than the numbers they're actually analyzing. So right. I think it's important to have a long-term view of the problem and the solutions that you're working toward. And KEA has, we have analogous, also being on the board of KEA, we have analogous problems we consider. For instance, people ask us all the time if we're looking at tidal generation, because obviously there's tremendous amount of power in the waters around Kodiak. And the thing is, there's no technology that's on the shelf that we can purchase with some kind of reasonable ability to predict its lifespan and to cost it out. And we're too small a community to commit to technology that is not yet proven. Mm. And so it's just a reasonable place to make a decision, you know, when you're responsible for other people's money or for your community's investment, you have to make responsible decisions. So we would love to be able to utilize the power in the ocean currents and the tides, and we'll do it as soon as it's feasible, probably, but we can't do it before it's proven.
Right.
So there's, you know, there are tough decisions. You can't always make the decision you want to, but sometimes you can find good reasons to make the decision you want to.
And I remember the inciting incident for those mid-sized cities that I mentioned. For them, it was, will China stop taking U.S. electronic waste? And then they just had nothing to do with it. They couldn't, like, when they sorted it out, they just had, I think there are other countries that'll take it, but at a radically higher expense than China will, because China's, at the time, I believe, was subsidizing, like, they were accepting electronic waste at cost and then recycling it at a very high degree of efficiency, but they just decided to stop doing that. And for some of those recycling programs, it was just the killing blow. I mean, they just couldn't cost it out. So how did you end up on KEA and on the threshold board?
Well, I think a lot about these issues, and I have conversations with friends about them, and so I'm a terrible armchair quarterback, really, and I guess at some point I just felt like I had the responsibility to see if I could contribute to a solution rather than just bemoan the fact that we don't have, you know, that we're not doing as much as we could. So
right.
I want things to be better, and I want to see if I can help make them better. And I was challenged initially to be on the board. You know, well, you like talking about these things, then this is what we discuss. Maybe you need to sit at the table. And so I thought, okay, yeah, maybe I should.
So we've talked a lot about how you as an individual, you know, do your part to combat climate change. What are some things that we can do, the general public can do, and also insofar as helping out with KEA and Threshold, how can we do our part to accomplish the mission, so to speak?
Man, that I hesitate because there's a lot of things I could say that are pretty obvious, and so maybe that's I'm not sure that helps a whole lot. I mean, it's pretty obvious right. that you want to be efficient with your power use, and you want to take into account packaging when you purchase things, and you want to recycle what you can recycle, and pay attention to what is and isn't recyclable, and so I'm not sure what else I can say to convince somebody who's not doing those things. Either you understand the environmental problems that we're facing, and you're doing what you know you can do to minimize your impact, or you're probably not going to be convinced by me saying, yeah, you should try and be efficient with your
right
travel
right.
and your heat use and your energy use. So I don't really know how to answer that question. One thing I think about when I think about sustainability is that it's a much bigger question than most people realize. I think sustainability has become a buzzword that is associated with like tree huggers or something like that. But sustainability has a dictionary definition, and the alternative is really not good, right? and so when we're talking about sustainability, it's an easy word to understand, and maybe not everybody realizes that it's how profound a difference it is from the way our economy has operated, not just modern economy, but humanity as part of our evolution, the mechanism of natural selection. Our great power has been to exploit our environment to the benefit of ourselves and our ability to procreate. And so that's how natural selection works. And so throughout history, that has been okay. And it's only in the last, maybe 100 or few hundred years that we've realized the writing was on the wall. This can't go on forever. Because the world was an unlimited environment when there was several hundred thousand people in it.
Right.
It was unlimited. You know, it didn't matter how much you dumped into the river or the ocean, because the dilution rate was irrelevant.
Right.
Or the atmosphere. That's just not true anymore. It's a finite environment. There's enough of us here that we are actually having a measurable effect on the cleanliness of our water and our air. And it's glaringly obvious now. You know, there's a really interesting experiment, and if I'd thought of it earlier, I would have like read it and written down some key points about it. But if you take a Petri dish and you add enough bacteria to that Petri dish, that they will last, they'll be enough food in that agar for one day, for 24 hours. And they grow at a rate of doubling every second.
Mm-hmm.
They're fine for 23 hours and 59 seconds. It's that last second that kills them. You know, it is that's when everything is, there's half of that Petri dish, half of the resources in that agar are still available at 23 hours, 59 minutes and 59 seconds. It's that last second where that last doubling, it's all over.
Yeah.
It happens really suddenly when you look at it in that compressed time frame. And I'm afraid we're at the last second, you know? And so we have to take this seriously. It's just not a joke. I mean, the extinctions are happening. So the further we go down this road, the more impoverished our ecosystems will be.
In the words of my late grandfather, it's not the fall that kills you, it's the sudden stop at the end.
Yep.
And on this last, you know, lovely positive note, what would you say to, because I know people who are my age who are just like, oh, the world will be burnt to a crisp, and this is a foregone conclusion, and I get to be, you know, pretty much the last generation at the going away party for civilization as we understand it. And I mean, it is a genuine sort of nihilism. And what would you say to sort of shake these people out of that kind of stupor?
Well, I think they may well be right. So I can't say too much. But I think, you know, my attitude is there's a lot that good that's happening. So if you focus on the bad, that could be depressing and demoralizing, and then you'd be wasting your own life.
Right.
And so you do have a life to live. And so I would say go bike riding, you know, have a good pint, you know, and enjoy your life and see if you can contribute to the positive part of that. I'm less worried about the people who are nihilistic than I am about the people who are ignoring the problem. That, and the more of us that can do positive things, I think that helps people who haven't focused on these issues, because it's not every, you know, I went to school and learned about, I was environmental studies major, you know, I studied this stuff for years. And so, you know, not everybody does that. And you can't blame somebody for not studying that. Right. But hopefully someone in their lives, you know, makes a good enough point or a good enough example that they can see. So the more people we bring on to understand, the better off we'll be.
Okay. Well, thanks again for joining us, Ben. I really appreciate it. This has been another episode of KMXT 100.1 FM's Talk of the Rock. I've been your host today, Dylan Simard, and thanks again for coming. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you, Dylan.